Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. New York Times bestselling author Caroline Leavitt writes novels that explore the struggles and conflicts that people face in their search for happiness. In her latest With or Without You, the night before a big break, an aging troubled rocker argues with his longtime lover, the two of them drinking and taking a pill. In the morning, he wakes and she doesn't, going into a coma. When she emerges, her personality is radically different, causing huge changes for herself, for him, and for the young doctor caring for her. Caroline Leavitt is the award-winning author of 12 novels, including the New York Times bestsellers Pictures of You and Is This Tomorrow? Her latest is With or Without You, and it's a pleasure to welcome Caroline Leavitt back to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you back.
It's a pleasure to be back. I just love your show, and I'm just so happy to be here.
Well, a great pleasure to have you on the program, and thank you very much. So, what brought you to this particular idea?
It's a really strange story. It's for me, usually my books germinate for years and years until I'm ready to write them. And this is actually my second coma book, and it's very different from the first. Years and years ago, after the birth of my son, I developed this rare, mysterious blood disorder, and the hospital didn't think I was going to survive. So they put me into a medical coma for 3 weeks. And what they did is they also gave me memory blockers because they didn't want me to remember any of the procedures they were doing. It just made it easier for them. And so when I woke up, my mind was wiped of everything that had happened. And nobody who had gone through this with me, my husband, my family, my friends, wanted to talk about it because they would start crying or they were just so traumatized. But my body remembered. I would get all these kind of post-traumatic things happening to me. Certain smells would set me off. I was afraid to go to sleep for a really long time. And a friend of mine who was a psychiatrist said, you know, when people are hypnotized, the brain does not know the difference. You can tell someone under hypnosis that they're freezing and they'll start to shiver. Why don't you just write about your coma and you'll feel better? So I wrote about the coma and I wrote about a character who was actually just like me, you know, a young mother who went in to have a child and came out in a coma. And I didn't feel better after I wrote that book. And I still was having the symptoms. It was sort of a dark, serious book. So about 5 years ago, I started thinking, what if I write a book about somebody who's in a very different sort of coma than the one I was in, like somebody who remembers everything and who not only remembers everything, but is different. And I started to research coma. And I have a friend named Joseph Clark who works at the University of Cincinnati researching coma. And I started to ask him, like, well, you know, what kinds of things can happen to people? And he started telling me that a lot of people can wake from coma with their brains changed, with different memories, and also radically different abilities. There's a case of one woman who woke up and she was speaking perfect Mandarin, and she quit her job and moved to China. There was another guy who had never played an instrument, and when he woke up, he was a virtuoso on the violin, and he began playing, you know, Carnegie Hall and all these places. And I thought that was just so fascinating, and it just filled me with so much wonder. And it was so much lighter for me to think about coma in that way than in my first coma book. So I set about writing it.
So let me ask you a question that just comes from what you just said to me, that idea that if you write the story, you'll feel better. Has that ever worked for you? Where you can write and you feel better about what you're writing about?
You know, that's always my, I'm laughing because the answer to that is no, not really. I mean, the answer is always that I always hope that I will. I hope that I will put stuff in its place and I can move on and I won't be haunted by it anymore. But the truth of the matter is that no, I really believe that what haunts you always sort of haunts you. Most of my PTSD stuff has gone, except I don't like to go to sleep. But I really think that's time. I think the issue for me was being able to live inside another character's life for a while. I love that feeling, and to feel a sense of wonder about it, and that helped. But as far as writing the novelist therapy, I wish it were true, but it never works out that way.
And just the second part of that, and then we'll move to the story itself. But this being a second coma novel, as you described it, do you think that you need time? You need time to understand what had happened to you before you can fully write and digest it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I wrote that book too fast. And I think that's why I always feel like, well, my novels have to just sort of gestate for, usually it's about 5 or 6 years before I then pick up the pages again and think, oh, now I know what I want to write about. Now I sort of am starting to understand this. And I think that's what happened here.
The name of the new book is With or Without You by Carolyn Levitt, and it is published by Algonquin. So tell us about Stella. Stella is a nurse who is in a relationship with Simon, who is the bass player for a rock band. The rock band is starting to go on the downward side, let's say. And tell us about Stella and what puts her in this position in the first place.
Well, I wanted to start out with somebody who is very, very practical and down to earth. And Stella is a nurse, and she loves being a nurse, and she's sort of a caretaker. And I also wanted to explore what happens in a long-term relationship. And so when she was 20, she got together with Simon, and it was exciting because he was a rock star and she got to go out on the road, and it quickly became unexciting. And she began, as she grew older into her 40s, she wanted him to grow up a bit. And I liked seeing what was going to happen to her with a different personality, because her different personality initially is totally the opposite, where she's not very practical at all at first. And she changes. And I think that happens a lot in a lot of relationships with or without coma. And I just really wanted to write about that.
There is one section in the book as the drug has taken effect. Stella saying, "I'm here," she wants to say to Simon, "I'm right here." She feels so sorry for him when she hears him crying. She can feel where he is by the heat in the room moving closer toward her, warming her. She can hear it too, little skips in his voice, the loss of control. He's a color too, a soft gray blue. She knows there is a scientific name for that, that there are people who can hear colors. She wants to stroke his hair and tell him it's going to be okay. "Don't worry, baby," she thinks, though she's never once called him baby. "Don't worry." And that is, as you mentioned at the beginning, this idea that while there is a disconnect between the two of them, she has incredible awareness.
Yeah. She does have incredible awareness. And I think that when I was doing research, people have all different experiences from coma. I mean, certainly there are people who do not have great experiences and they emerge from it damaged. But there are people who, you know, your neurons are firing all over the place and you are changed. A lot of the experience that I gave Stella when she was in coma, I didn't remember anything while I was in coma. I just took those experiences from when I was first waking up. And they wake you up very, very slowly. And it's just really strange. I can't describe it any other way. So I gave it to Stella. But it is like that, where colors did have music to me. And sometimes things were all in black and white, and I could sort of sense people coming closer to me. And there was always this sense of, what's the real reality here? And I always looked at that with a sense of wonder more than I looked at it with a sense of terror. And I really wanted to capture that.
When it comes to your personal experiences, did it help you in sort of remembering some of the feelings?
Not really. Not really. The things that I remember from the coma are mostly from waking up and I don't remember everything. And, people around me still don't want to talk about it. So I just sort of created them out of my imagination. And I wrote into it so deeply until it felt real to me.
Why do you think people don't want to talk about it? Because I
They
have
were
to say,
real.
as I'm talking to you now, that's all I want to talk about.
It was this weird thing. I mean, it was like the greatest moment of my life where I had this incredible, happy, easy pregnancy and easy delivery, and I was ready to go home. And then one moment I was fine, and then all of a sudden I was dying. And my poor husband was spending so much time at the hospital worrying over me and the newborn baby, and there were all these doctors around all the time, and nobody knew what I had. And virtually every minute there were a series of different doctors from different departments coming in because I was what they called an interesting case. They just didn't know what was wrong with me. And I think it was really, really hard for everybody to see me all wired up, and the doctors were saying I wasn't going to live. And one thing my husband said when the pandemic started was, he said this was the first time he ever felt that kind of dread again since I was in the coma, because people just expected that any moment I was going to die. And the weird thing is, I never knew that. I mean, I
Right.
never knew that until like way after the coma when the doctors finally told me. They just don't want to talk about it. And you're right. Usually the people who do want to talk about it are the ones who weren't there.
We have been talking about Stella, but I would like to ask you about Simon. Is he a good guy?
That's funny that you asked that, because when I first was writing the book and I was showing the pages to people, people were saying, "Oh, Simon is such a jerk." And I was deeply offended because I just felt he needs to change. He just needs to grow up a little. And if you stick with him, you will see this amazing thing happening to him where he will change. And I was very conscious of the fact that, there's this thing in publishing where you want to write characters who are likable. And I kept thinking, well, human beings are not always likable,
Right.
and they do have flaws. And I sort of wanted him to be, out of sorts at the beginning. And in fact, in the beginning, I actually made him more dislikable, and then I changed it a little bit. I changed it a little bit, but I just think that it just makes him a more complex person. And I mean, I loved him. I still love him. I hope he's doing well now, wherever he is.
Because he is struggling to cope with
Yes.
this transformation that Stella has taken, and this is a 2 month period of time that she's in a coma. I mean, that's a long time.
Right. It's a very long time. And the thing is that he did make the decision to stay with her, even though he felt, resentful, and because his big chance was not going to probably happen. And also, I just felt that, when you're in a world like that of like you were once a rock star, and there's all these people throwing themselves at you, and there's the whole issue of fame, you sort of forget what it means to have a real human relationship, I think. My husband writes about music, and he knows a lot of people in rock and roll, and I've met a lot of them. And the main thing that I wanted to know from them is, what does it feel like when you have that? And even more importantly, what does it feel like when it's taken away? How do you deal with that, especially as you're getting older? And that really, really fascinated me.
Caroline Leavitt is our guest. The name of the new novel is With or Without You. It's published by Algonquin. Tell us about Libby, because this is interesting. Stella is a nurse and is working in the hospital where Libby is a doctor.
Right. I really wanted to, well, I really needed to have a nurse in the book because the nurses were the ones who really saved me when I was in the coma. They were with me all the time, and they would do these amazing things, like, towards I was after the coma, I was in the hospital for a couple of months, and they wouldn't allow me to get out of bed, so I couldn't wash my hair, and I felt really awful because my hair is really long and curly. And one day, two of the nurses came in, and they had jerry-rigged this system of these two big plastic bags, one filled with shampoo and water, and one filled with clear water. And they washed my hair for me, and for me, that was such a big thing. But I also wanted to create a doctor because I also noticed that even today, the female doctors got a shorter shift than the male doctors did. And one of them actually told me that she was on a plane once where somebody was having a heart attack and she ran to help. And people kept pushing her away, even though she said, "I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor." And they had a male nurse treat the person who had had the heart attack instead. And I thought, I really want to write about that. You know, somebody who is trying to be someone, which is a kind of fame too, I guess, and whose gender is stopping that a little bit.
It's maybe 100, 115 pages in the novel when Stella wakes up, and that's a really vivid section of the novel because so much is coming to life at that moment, literally and figuratively. What was it like to write that part?
It was really hard. It was writing this novel was the hardest thing that I've ever written. I will say that once I finished it and it was out of my hands, I felt great and happy and light and full of wonder. But while I was writing it, there were moments where I was sitting in the middle of my office just sobbing to my husband and saying, I'm going to give them the advance back. The book just, I don't know what it's about. It's not hanging together. I think it's the worst thing. I really don't know what it's about. And at that point, I just sort of stopped and put all the pages across the floor and tried to figure out what was working and what wasn't working. And I just did what I always do, which is just to go deeper, to dive deeper into the whole situation until I really felt that, you know, I was there in that place again. And until I began to feel how extraordinary that was. To me, it's still completely extraordinary. And that's sort of what I tried to get through on the page.
It must be an incredibly fearful moment when you think to yourself that the book that you have been writing for so long and have been working so hard on, that you don't understand it.
Well, that, you know what? That's a really genius question because the thing is that as I'm writing, there's a lot of things that come out and I don't realize why I'm writing about them until afterwards. And then I realize, oh, I always had a question about what would it be like to change yourself or what is it like to have fame and lose it? And what does it mean to live in the world? And realize that at any moment, your life can change automatically. And, you know, I think it's part of my writing process where I don't really know until the book is finished. And a lot of times, which is even stranger, I don't really know until someone asks me a question like you're doing. And then all of a sudden it hits me. Oh my God, that's right. That's what I was doing. And I didn't even realize it.
But at some gut level, you have to have trust in yourself, even though you may be emotional about it and feel that it's time to give the money back. But you still have trust that, okay, I'm good at what I do and I can figure this out.
Oh yeah, I always feel that way. I mean, my husband always tells me, "You're like this with every single book." So I've come to realize that, you know, it's my process. It's just like digging deep and working hard and feeling, you know, all kinds of different feelings. And I do have trust that sooner or later I will figure it out. And maybe, you know, there's always a feeling that maybe it's too soon and I just need a few more years. But I'm very persistent that way.
We were talking about Libby, and I do want to get back to this character because she does play an important role in this love triangle.
Yeah, she does. I wanted to, I'm trying to think of how to say this without giving anything away. I wanted to explore different kinds of people and what keeps people from having successful relationships, because a lot of times I feel like it comes from things that are haunting us from our past and wounds that we've carried that we've never really healed yet. And that's what I wanted to do with Libby. So I gave her a really sort of horrific wound from her past that she totally misinterpreted what had happened in her past, to believe that she had done something terrible. And she always had the feeling that any moment love would shut off, just like a faucet. And I just wanted to explore, like, well, what would happen if you reached a point where you couldn't shut it off? How would you do those relationships? I also really wanted to write about a female friendship because my female friendships are really, really important to me and strong. And how you would grapple with that, when your friend changes, or if you do something that's a betrayal to your friend, can you stay friends? I think it depends. I think it depends on the people. But those things really interested me.
The questions that you ask in this novel of what do we owe the other people in our lives and when does the cost of our relationship become too great? Do you fully know the answers to those as you're writing or need to know the answers?
I did sort of know the answer to that because I thought about it a lot, and I think about it a lot in my own life in terms of, the family I grew up with and friends and this and that. I think the answer is different for everybody, but for me, the answer is I feel that nothing is more important than love, and you at least try to give everything to those you love to help them until you really feel like this is like too big a cost. I can't do this. This is really harmful to me. And then you can pull back. And I was very, very aware of that as I was writing it. And I was also really, really aware of the fact, well, is this a good thing to think this way, or is this a bad thing? And I don't know the answer. I just know that it's the right answer for me. I'm always going to do everything for those I love, unless I find myself so decimated that I can't manage in the world, and then I will pull back.
And the understanding that you have for your own life informs but doesn't necessarily have to be represented by the characters in the novel.
Exactly right. What happens is as I become the characters, I don't mean this to sound woo-woo or anything, but it feels like I'm taking on their memories and their lives, and I sort of know how they would react and what they're capable of and what they absolutely cannot do. But it's not necessarily what I would do in that situation.
Do the actions sometimes of the characters that you write about surprise you, though?
Oh yeah, all the time. I just, there's a kind of betrayal that Libby does, and it was really, really hard for me to write it because I kept feeling I would never do that. I personally would never, never, ever do that. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, but Libby would. She would, and she has her reasons for doing it. And if you know about her backstory, then you can understand why she would do something like this.
When you are writing a book like this, is there a moment, as you said, it was very difficult. And where's the fun part, I guess, in the creation of this fictional world of the thing that at the end of it, and we're talking about this, and now assuming you'll write the next novel, that there's something that brings you back to say, okay, I want to do this again.
Oh, it's tremendous fun. It really is. It's the greatest joy of the world. The best part of all is when you think of an idea, and I'm able to sell my novels on the basis of the first 70 pages. And writing those first 70 pages, it's like the first 3 months of a new relationship where everything is great. And it's just so much fun, and everything is burning out of me, and I cut out photographs of who I think the characters look like, and I pasted it all over my office. And there's just a sense of promise and wonder, and I just get really excited. Then, as I get deeper into the novel, where I'm at what I call the point of no return, where I can't really stop, even doing the really hard work of figuring it out, once I've figured it out, there's this amazing, tremendous sense of satisfaction and just pure joy. There's always this moment where I think, oh my God, how lucky am I to be able to do this and to be able to live these other lives. And yeah, there is a cost to it, where it's difficult sometimes, and sometimes it's impossible, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I just feel incredibly lucky to be able to do this.
You write about these characters who have very messy lives for all of the reasons that we've been talking about through the course of our conversation. But with that also eventually comes a freedom, right?
Yeah, I think that I personally have had a very messy, messy life. And I've learned that it's very strange to look back at the things that have happened to me that have been like totally traumatic. I had a fiance die in my arms 2 weeks before our wedding. My first husband kicked me out of the house. Then there was this coma. But when I look at all those incidences now, when I look back, I think in a way they really changed me, in that I feel more compassionate towards other people, and I feel like I understand more about how life can change in a minute. And instead of being afraid of that, it's given me this sense that, well, that can be an amazing thing.
Well, the new novel is so moving and really something. It's called With or Without You. It is published by Algonquin. Carolyn Leavitt, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much, and best of luck with the new work.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm completely delighted and thrilled.
Again, Caroline Leavitt's new novel is With or Without You. It is published by Algonquin. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.